This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. Music producers talking Philly sports. And Prem, I am still infuriated.
Oh, man. Well, listen, it's been 2 days. We've had two mornings to wake up and think about this.
Yeah.
And while I am also upset with how they lost, because that's a game that they win 9 times out of 10 when you're up 13 at the half, they're going to handle business tonight at home, and it's going to be convincing. And I think you're going to see another game in line with what we saw in games 2 and 3, which were both 16-point victories.
Yep.
I like the Sixers by between 7 and 10 points tonight in at the center.
As you just mentioned, they blew game 4 in Atlanta. The series now comes back to the center. Tied at 2.
Like we predicted on this show.
I tweeted
it out a week ago. They're going to split in Atlanta after splitting at home. 2-2, game 5 essentially for the series. Because, you know, say they drop this at home tonight, the Hawks going home with a head of steam to wrap it up.
It's a different series.
Whole different series. Whole different. Now, we can still win in 7 games if that's the case, but you don't want to go that route.
Now, even though we predicted a split here and a split there, this should have been over in 5.
It should have been.
And maybe even 4, to be honest.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, and I've talked about this ad nauseum at this point, it took a record performance shooting in game 1 for the Hawks, hitting like over 60-something percent, well, 70% in the first half, or whatever they were, shooting the lights out the place in game 1 to win, and it took Joel having the worst game of his entire career for them to only beat us by 3 points.
Yeah.
So those are things that don't happen 3 times in 1 series.
I would go as far as to say Embiid had a disgraceful performance.
I hate that word because it makes it seem like he is not pushing through a meniscus tear, because the guy is pushing through
it. No, he is. He's a warrior.
Knee. But I hear you. I'm frustrated too, because you're right. He should have been dishing a few times to guys like Toby and Seth in that fourth quarter.
He had to go for that layup. He had to be the one.
That's a gimme for Joe.
I know.
That's a gimme. You know, and he
You're
said
7 foot. You know what I mean?
Said
you
after
be
the game,
that.
He should. He said after the game he didn't go for the dunk. He didn't think he had enough of an angle to get the dunk.
Yeah.
But that's a layup that he's making 97.7% of the time.
We'll get into it with Anthony DiRenzo and the man in the box, Jimmy Graves, when we enter the center.
Yeah.
But first, brought to you by Proline Music, everything for the musician. It's time for Vet Fact.
This is a Vet Fact.
So, Tech, June 16th, 1990, exactly 31 years ago today.
Oh, man.
The Chicago Cubs came to town. They weren't a good baseball team. They were 26 and 38 at that point.
They were hapless at that point.
They were very hapless. The Phillies ended up winning the game 2-1 behind a game-winning 7th-inning home run by Darren Dutch Dalton. Rest in peace.
Ooh, one of my favorite players of all time.
One of mine, too. Had to highlight Dutch's game winner from the 1990 season.
With that, we stay on to the Phillies, as we usually do when we come out of the Vet Fact. The Phillies bailed Joe Girardi out with 3 straight walk-offs in a row. Then a 7-run explosion against the Yankees in a vintage Aaron Nola game.
Oh, man, he was awesome.
Followed by a very predictable 1-run game where they left 10 men on base in a loss to the Dodgers late Monday night.
Yeah, I love the late games, though.
I mean, look, it doesn't matter who's wearing the jerseys, who the manager is.
It feels that way.
It doesn't matter who it is. They will always, after a big 7-run explosion game, the following game go 1 run.
Ah, it's remarkable. Consistency just isn't there. Well, in their defense, they were, you know, they're in L.A., which is a top tier.
Yeah, they can't win on the road.
They're really poor on the road. Very poor on the road. You know, as much as I really want to be the optimist with the Phils and say they could pull it out and try to win the division from the Mets, because they still are within that 5-game range, I just keep looking at this squad and I keep thinking, you know, all right, maybe we'll win 85, 86 games. It's still where I'm at. And that would be a winning record.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be enough. The Mets are going to be a 90-win baseball team.
I agree with that, because at some point they're going to really just pull away with this thing.
You would think that. Now, you know,
maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, hey, it took a while for Francisco Lindor to get going.
Well, yeah,
he's been tearing a cover off the ball lately.
Yeah, it's unstoppable.
And DeGrom is pitching like Cy Young.
Yeah, he's
like
tremendous.
literally
one
like
of the best ever.
Cy Young. I mean, it's just remarkable. They don't even have to do a Cy Young vote this year.
No.
You can just give it to him now.
Absolutely.
It's remarkable. I hope we don't have to face him much again, but we probably will.
Yeah. Odubel and Segura are the best players on this team.
Really impressed,
at the moment.
Man. I love it. I'm happy for Odubel. When you come back from...
I refer to them as the villains, by the way.
Oh, they are kind of like villains because, yeah. You know, Segura has had an up-and-down career. He's gotten into it with all of his managers.
True.
At one point or another.
Right.
Including Girardi just a few weeks back.
We were just talking about trading him. What was it, last week? Can't trade him.
Yeah,
you can't trade him now.
The guy's hitting 335. he's your best hitter on the squad. He's got a knack for the clutch moments, kind of like Jimmy Rollins had to me.
Right. Yeah, he comes up big in those moments. Well, we'll talk about it further with Kevin Dixon on the Vet Line when we go
around the bases.
Real quick, Prem, I don't want to talk about this at all, but it's news, so I have to mention
it.
Yeah, because we have to.
Okay.
The Birds cut Jamie Newman and signed Nick Mullins as the third-string quarterback.
That's a smart move. It's just a smart move.
Yeah. I mean, look, I saw Nick Mullins.
He's got starting history.
You know,
and he's got actually his
and
numbers are impressive over the amount of games he started. His numbers are impressive. I think I saw something like only Patrick Mahomes has more yards or something in his first so many starts.
That's absurd, though. That's some of these numbers.
Shout out to Eagles Unfiltered on that one.
Yeah, look, Nick Mullins, I saw him firsthand look fresh off the trash heap against a mediocre Eagles defense last season.
Yeah.
So I'm out on Nick Mullins.
Well, it's your third quarterback. It's your emergency quarterback.
But honestly, you know? I would rather have seen Jamie Newman in the preseason games.
Developmental, yeah.
But
I
messaged Mike Kay from NJ.com and asked why he was cut. And he told me that he simply wasn't good enough to make it to camp.
I've heard that. I've seen it publicly tweeted by other reporters equivalent to Mike Kay.
How do we know that? Like... It was OTAs. What was he that bad in practice?
You still have coaches evaluating. You know, you still have guys evaluating. Maybe he's just not. Maybe the timing is so off that NFL caliber defensive backs are going to pick him off a lot, and they just saw that quick. You know,
maybe.
Someone saw something.
If they think Nick Mullins is a better option, then that must be the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you got Joe Flacco as your two, you technically already have your veteran backup. Now, Nick Mullins ain't a veteran backup, but he's not a rookie backup either. He's somewhere in that average backup role.
I keep thinking there must have been other factors involved with Jamie Newman being cut.
Maybe. We'll never know at this point. Hey,
no.
I wish the kid the best. I mean, he had a really nice college tape.
I can't even think straight with the Sixers. Tonight, Game 5, South Philly. I'm still disgusted with Game 4. We'll talk about it.
110-103.
Oh, yeah?
110-103 Sixers.
Wow.
Taking a 3-2 series lead back to Atlanta to wrap it up.
We'll talk about it next.
Pro-line music. Pro-line music.
Located at 490 Lincoln Highway in Fairless Hills, PA.
Pro-line music.
Everything for the musician. Carrying all major brands. You find a better price, we'll beat it. Offering lessons in person or virtual. On-site repair service center. Rentals. Recording studio.
Pro-line music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Yes, sir.
Pro-line music. Pro-line music.
Pro-line music. Everything for the musician.
Enter the center.
Yes! And the Sixers win it!
With Tech and Prem.
They score! Bang! Bang! The Flyer wins!
The Vet Alumni.
Joined now on the Vet Line by Anthony DiRenzo, current producer for WTIC 1080 in Connecticut and formerly of 1210 WPHT here in Philly. Anthony, thanks for taking the time to talk Sixers with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
For sure. So we all saw what happened on Monday night. Very, very frustrating game.
I can't get over it.
The worst second halves I've ever seen Joel Embiid play. I still feel like Sixers in six. Where are you at with it personally?
It's hard after that game to be thinking Sixers and six, but I think you're with the right mentality there. I think they'll still get it done. It was definitely a little bit of a wake-up call. But when you only have 39 points in the second half and Ben and Joel were essentially non-existent that entire half, I mean, you know, I'm not. It would have been nice to pull that out, but the fact that it was that close with, you know, that much hindrance on the Sixers, I think they will. You know, they've already responded other points, you know, in this season where people thought they'd fall down, and they've kind of faced adversity head on. So I expect them to keep doing that. I know Embiid's beat up a little bit, but I think he'll get back rolling. And yeah, Sixers and six.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money. It was a wake-up call. And I was thinking about it earlier. It took, in their the Hawks' two wins, it took a record shooting performance in game one, a franchise record shooting performance. And on Monday night, it took a career worst half from an MVP candidate for them to beat us. I think those types of things just aren't common. And even so, to only lose by three is huge. I think Toby has been the most consistent player in this series so far. Who is someone off the bench that you would like to see more from?
That's a good question. I think I'm really just... I know people don't want to just shove Maxey in there because he's still a rookie, but the energy he gives, I would have loved to see him in there a little more last night rather than Furkan. But, you know, I think the bench as a whole, as inconsistent as they are, they really do find times to perform when they need it. So, I don't know. Shake Milton's another guy, too, who's just been on lately. So, I would probably go with either of them.
There you go. You lead me to a next rapid fire question real quick. Shake Milton should have taken that three pointer to win the or tie the game. True or false?
Yeah, I think he should have. Yeah, I mean, the Curry thing was just rushed, and it wasn't a terrible look, and you know, it almost went in. But I just, with Shake, his tendencies lately and how hot he's been, I would have been fine with him just pulling up. He was wide open as well.
I know.
Ben Simmons, and I can't hide it. I'm disgusted. when you look at these playoff losses and then you look at how much they lost by, they're all by 3-4 points. Then you look at Ben's free throw percentage, and you can argue that his missed free throws were the difference in each loss. Will he be the reason that this team doesn't win a championship?
I really hope not. I really, really hope not. If that is, I mean, he will be gone next year if they lose in some dramatic fashion like that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's looking like it could happen. And I mean, it's not just him. The entire team needs to get better with free throws, and that's just without a doubt.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what the issue's been all year. They're so efficient. They work on everything else, but their free throws, they almost ignore as a problem. So, I mean, you only can hope that they focus on that in practice. And I mean, I know specifically Ben just comes up small in moments, but he, I don't know what it is when Embiid's out. It just seems like he can never.
And I hate to kill him the next day after he puts up damn near triple-double numbers. But the free throws, it all goes back to his free throws. When he's bricking those things, it's unbelievable.
When you lose by three points and you have double-digit turnovers on the road, and your best player shoots less than 25%, you're not going to win those games.
Only Ben Wallace at this point in the playoffs has a worse free throw percentage. I mean, it's really hard to believe. Tobias Harris, he's averaging 23 points a game. He shoots 40% from three this playoffs. He made some nice shots in this game, but he only took 15 shots. Considering Embiid, it ain't 100%, and Ben is, should Tobias be shooting more?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I think
Tobias
has looked very good lately. I mean, he's definitely lived up to everyone's expectations this season, and it seems that he has stepped up in big moments in the playoffs. We've already seen that. So I would love for him to be a little more trigger happy on the offense.
He's been real decisive when he goes to the hole, too. Like, he's making very high percentage attempts. You know, stuff from the free throw line and in, or even the mid-range jumpers. You know, two nights ago in the fourth quarter, you know, he took two shots in the fourth quarter. That's it.
Yeah.
You got to have a guy like that to pick up Joel, where Joel was obviously struggling. You have to take more shots.
Well, it seems like he has to be that guy. Like, Ben's not going to be that guy. And then, I mean, you know, Ben facilitates the offense better than anyone on this team. That's no doubt. But when you're looking at shooters in the playoffs down the stretch, we have to rely on Tobias. We just have to. And you can't just keep that bench unit in there without at least one of those three in. And I would say put Tobias in with the bench unit more often than not, just because I think he would be able to drive the offense a little more as well. So I don't know, man. You question why Tobias wouldn't be as, you know, prompted to shoot, because, you know, all this team is aware of, you know, scoring problems when it comes down to last quarter, last second shots, and that's always a dilemma with them. So you got to hope Tobias just gets a little more confidence and is a little more productive offensively.
I went off on Twitter because I you
know, really? Wait, you?
Yes.
You?
I went off on Joe, and I got to tell you, I got a lot of backlash, even from my boy, shout out Johnny Good Times. I got a lot of bounce back saying this was more on Simmons than it was on Joe. But the way Joe played, he knew he didn't have it all game long, and he continued to put up brick after brick, wild shots.
Over 12.
He hovered by the 3-point line again. I looked at it like he was playing what Doc referred to as hero ball, but I get the hero ball thing, but I thought it was more that he played selfishly. He wasn't willing to give up the ball and see what Ben's got, see what Toby got. He wasn't doing that. He was throwing up prayers. They had no shot. And am I overreacting on this by wilding out on Joe? Did he just have a bad game, a bad night? He's sore, he's tired, he's cooked. Am I overreacting?
I would say so, a little bit. You are reacting a little bit.
Let's remember
how ridiculous he's been. Not just these playoffs, but the entire year. Like, the man is a machine. He has a torn meniscus.
He's a warrior.
Yeah, and he's just putting up, you know, usually around 30 a night anyway. And I know he wasn't looking great here, but in the second half and struggling against the Hawks, I feel like he's just in that mode where he has to be the leader, he has to be the driver, and he just forces himself, even if he misses shots, you know, just keep going at it. But I agree with you. I don't know if he could have kept or should have kept forcing it, because he did look a little laggy. I mean, I know people have said this, he looked, it was reminiscent of the Raptors Embiid, but I don't think we're going to be seeing more of that. I think, you know, he'll get a night or two of rest in, and I think, like I said earlier, it's a wake-up call, and I know Embiid knows how important this playoff run is. It's exactly why he's putting his body on the line. So we can't hit the panic button on Embiid yet. It is one game.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those anomaly. When you look at Joe's career, 0 for 12 in the second half of a meaningful game, that's an anomaly. I think that tonight at home, you're going to see a way different performance, which is why the Sixers, I believe, are 6-point favorites.
You know, he's listed as questionable.
Well, he's listed as questionable for every game
so far. That's true.
Now, looking ahead, Ant, we're looking ahead. We think the Sixers are going to win in six. And even though Tech sounds fed up, he also thinks they will.
Yes, I think they win in six.
Looking ahead, do you think we're going to get the Bucks now? Because the Nets are a wounded bird.
Ooh.
I don't know. I think either way, it seems like this is the window for the Sixers. It seems like this is the time. The Bucks and the Nets don't seem too challenging as originally thought. And I don't know, man. They have to find a way. And I think the Bucks most likely will move on. But
wow. I'll tell you what, though, man. I don't think anybody is beating the Phoenix Suns. I don't think anyone's beating them. They were my preseason sleeper pick to just make the playoffs.
Yep.
But Chris Paul, historically speaking, is a top 10 point guard, and he does not have a ring. Guys like that tend to get one at one point or another. I think the Sixers are going to represent the East, but I think they would lose in 6 or 7 games to the Suns.
Wow.
What do you think, Ann? Do you have the Sixers going and taking the whole chip, kit and caboodle, or do you have us losing in the finals?
I mean, I've said all year, I think they're capable of winning the finals. I'm going to just stick with it.
They will win the finals.
I'm not saying that I'm underestimating the Suns. I just don't think the Suns are reminiscent of any of these super teams that the NBA has had once it gets to this point, like in past years. There's no Warriors unstoppable team. There's no unstoppable Heat team. There's no, you know, Spurs team to stop us. I think the Sixers, I know the Suns would be a challenge, but I know they would be able to overcome it. And, you know, we are one of the best defensive teams in the league.
That's true.
You'd only hope they'd be able to slow down the offensive game that they have going over there in Phoenix.
Yeah, and hopefully Devin Booker parties the night before the games. You know, he's a little hungover.
All we can do is hope.
With that said, and we appreciate your insight on the Sixers and the playoffs. And being that we are the Vet alumni, we have to ask you for your veteran stadium memory.
All right, I have a little bit of a unique one. So I don't know if anyone remembers this, but there was something called a Philly Fan of the Century in the year 2000 when the new year came in, and there was a contest of a bunch of children, babies actually, and my brother won the contest of being Philly Fan of the Century.
That's amazing.
So we went down to the vet, like got to hang out in the bullpen, you know, went in the dugout, met Harry Callis, all that. And then we got to go to a game. And at that game, my dad went out on the field and got to like hold him up like Simba at the pitcher's mound, and everyone cheered. And
That's remarkable.
Have like a VHS tape of it still somewhere. But I was always at the vet. I was there a few times. I don't necessarily remember it all because I was pretty young. But that memory definitely sticks out the most.
That's fantastic. Probably on the big fan of vision, the obnoxious big screen. That's great, man.
And then the fanatic picking him up and all. So
that's awesome. Well, again, for our listeners who've been on the line with Anthony DiRenzo of WTIC 1080 in Connecticut, Ant, we appreciate it, and we'll hope to speak with you again down the line.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was awesome coming on. Look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
I got to tell you, even though it's not the end of the world, it's an inexcusable loss. It's hard for me to get over, but I'm hoping for a little positivity, Prem. So with that, we welcome back to the show, joining us on the Vet Line from the Dice Box Studio, the man in the box.
Man in the box.
Jimmy Graves.
I'm the man in the box.
Gentlemen, how are y'all doing tonight?
We're trying to stay optimistic.
I'm completely disgusted. I'm beside myself.
And I can totally understand. I can totally understand. Listen, this game really kind of blew my mind. I when you have an 18-point lead as the number one seed, I don't care where you're at, you're supposed to win that game. I mean,
absolutely.
So when you give up the 18-point lead and you still have an opportunity at the end of the game to win it, you're supposed to put that opponent away if they're supposed to be so-called a lesser opponent.
And this is a number one seed. That's what a number one seed is supposed to do.
Yep.
I personally do not think that we totally have an identity as far as a team. I think that we actually play off of, if you will, the fact that, you know, people are good at what they do. But also, that keeps us in games. But then we are in games also, and you have people that's supposed to do what they do who don't, i.e. Ben Simmons. You cannot have your supposed centerpiece, one of your centerpieces, who cannot make free throws.
By the way, the final play on Monday night, Ben Simmons wasn't on the floor.
He wasn't. That was remarkable to me.
Yeah.
It was very remarkable. But now, let me ask you this. Do you think Doc Rivers regrets not having him on the floor?
Maybe. That's a tough question because, you know, hypothetically, if they just go and hack him, and I forget if they were in the bone, if they had a foul to give or not. I don't think they had any fouls to give. Neither team had any fouls to give.
Right.
So they would have just put him right on the line.
Exactly. So with him right on the line, and with my belief, and, you know, from me studying the Sixers, I'm a total Philadelphia fan across the board. Me looking at Ben, for some reason, it just seems that in the regular season, to me, it seemed like his free throw percentage was looking better and better.
Yeah, he was at least making one of two most of the time.
At least one of two. Now that he's into the playoffs, for some reason, he'll miss both free throws. I don't know what's going on, fellas.
It's the nerves. It's nerves of the moment. And you know, when you have an all-star, a three-time or four-time, whatever he is, all-star, defensive player of the year, led the league in steals one of his years, you have a guy like that that is getting hurt by the moment. And the nerves of the moment, that's problematic. But I still believe in Ben, though. I still do believe in Ben. I'm not all the way off the Ben train, per se. He still almost posted a triple-double, and that's hard to argue, too.
I love him. He had 12 rebounds. He had 9 assists, and he had 11 points. A typical Ben night. You
exactly.
Understand what I'm saying?
Right.
But the free throws, these free throws in the playoffs, just like, I cannot remember the reporter that said it, but he said that Ben Simmons will make the Sixers lose a series because of the free throws.
Mm. That could be prophetic. That could be very prophetic.
Yeah, it's unacceptable is what it is. It really is unacceptable. And by the way, if Ben Simmons touts that stat line and Embiid has a typical Embiid game, that's a win. That's a win.
It's like a 10-point win. That's a 10-point win usually.
Yeah.
It's a 10-point win. Now let's switch off of Ben for a little bit. He's a problem. So you get your positive. You're able to pick your poison with your negatives. But now let's go to Joel real quick. Okay? So you have 21 rebounds. That's what your big man is supposed to do.
Yep.
You understand what I'm saying? He had 17 points on a bad night. But how can you go 0 for 12 in the second half and expect to lead your team? So now this is both of your stars that are having issues. What do you say about that, guys?
Well, I felt like Embiid played selfishly down the stretch of that game. He didn't defer to his guys when he knew full well that he didn't have it. And he continued to force shots. And that, to me, it's another thing that I just find to be unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that Seth Curry on the final play, obviously,
I love Seth.
He was shooting really well most of the night.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have the whatever Doc drew up, and Shake knew he had to get it to Seth. But Shake should have taken that shot because Seth wasn't open. He had the double. Right. He had the double clutch. The three.
He had the double clutch. Yes, he did.
So yeah. You know, I basically what I was getting at. We're talking about other guys taking the lead, taking that role on, and the way Shake has already kind of had that killer mentality this series. I really would have loved to have seen him just pull right up and take that shot.
Yeah.
Were you thinking the same thing at that point?
I think Shake should have took it. Shake has been, you know, namesake. He's been hot lately, and he's been shaking and baking.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Doc said, these guys are playing hero basketball.
Yeah.
And it's a cool game. It's not a boxing match where it's just you against the individual. It's 5-on-5.
Yeah.
It's no way that we should have lost that game.
I felt like down the stretch it became 1-on-5. I felt like it was all about Embiid. And,
it felt that way.
And he wasn't going to dish it. He wasn't going to. And I felt it as a fan at home watching it. And I just know that the Hawks felt it on the floor. They had to.
Yeah. Graves, I got the Sixers tonight 110-103, going up 3-2. What are your thoughts on the final score prediction?
You know what? I'm a little nervous to predict the final score.
Okay, that's fair. That's
me
fair.
Too. Me too. I let him predict the final score. I won't predict the final score.
Listen, we'll go with Prim. We'll go with Prim, and hopefully Prim is right.
Hopefully.
What I think is that these guys, like, I really think we have some, for our cornerstones on the team, and the negatives and the positives, I think we have some good intangibles on the team. Like Seth Curry, you would never think that, all right, now he's getting a starting role and he's going to play how he's playing. He's playing magnificently.
Yeah, he really is.
When he comes, even though he stepped in, he had 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 10 points.
He was lost on defense, though. Absolutely lost.
Yeah, defense, he was a minus 13, I think. Minus 12.
You know what? Let me get the one thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about. The starters. Who would you say in this series, who would you say has the better starters? Atlanta or Philadelphia? Who should score more points as starters?
Well, there's no doubt we should be scoring more points.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, but at the same time, of all the players on the floor besides Joel, you know, Trae Young obviously has the most 40-point potential besides Joel.
Trae is a monster.
And they got Bogdanovic and Herter.
He's hot and cold, though. Bogdanovic had some really cold stretches in this series.
He did,
but they have shooters.
Yeah.
In this game, Atlanta starters scored 83 points, and Philadelphia starters scored 75
That's
points.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I feel that it is unacceptable if we're supposed to be the better team. Our starters should always score more. It did not happen, and, you know, you can't always depend on the bench, but at the end of the day, you know, we have to do better as far as collectively, as a group, as a unit, especially the starters.
Before we let you go, Graves, the finals, will the Sixers be in them?
You know I'm a Philly guy. I'm Philly born and bred.
But be objective. Be honest.
I love Philadelphia teams, but I am an honest realist and I'm a critic. And I do not think that the Sixers will be in the finals.
Balloon
I think
they have popped.
I happen to agree with you, Graves. I got big news for you.
I still got us, man. Sixers in six in this series, and then I don't care if it's the Nets or the Bucks, they're going to find a way to do it. But the Phoenix Suns are winning the trophy this year.
Yep, there it is.
You heard what Prem said, Tech.
Yeah.
Prem, I love you guys, man.
Graves,
I
will see you at the Dice Box cookout on Monday.
Say no more. Prem, I'm going to holler at you, baby. Y'all take it easy. Philly, we born and bred. There it is.
Yeah, you know what time it is. We're talking about the fightings here. The fightings.
The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 world champions of baseball.
It's time to go around the bases on the Vet Alumni Podcast.
Oh, my God. Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here.
We're joined now on the Vet Line by Kevin Dixon, a current student at Dan Patrick EDU, and he covers Philly sports for Section 215. Also co-hosts his own podcast, Bullpen Blues Pod, with David Esser. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Fellas, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
So the Phils, 64, 65 games in. How are you feeling about our chances to catch the Mets at this point?
You know, I don't think it's as crazy as it seems. And I feel that way because the division's just not that good. The Mets are playing really good baseball right now, but so are the Phillies. They've done a really nice job of not falling out of the race. If you look around the division, like the Nationals are buried now.
That's true.
The Braves are teetering a bit. I mean, you want to stay within that five-game threshold. It's still only June. What you don't want to do is what's happened to Washington and Miami, where they're now eight and a half games out. I mean, that's even with a lot of time left, that's a tall task to try to overcome. Phillies have done a nice job of at least just staying in the race, even if it's been ugly at times.
That's true. They have. And when you mentioned that within five games, you know, except for the 2007 Phillies who recovered seven games with 17 left, you're generally right. It happened quick, too, with the Nationals and Marlins. They sunk fast.
Yeah, it just gets away from you. You start playing bad baseball and then the teams in front of you start winning some games. I mean, you can have a bad week and you can lose three or four games.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. It is early yet. You know, I look at the squad and I think Tech feels the same. We kind of feel like it's just what we've seen for the majority of the past few seasons. But I personally feel like there's more of an upside with this squad. Who is your player to watch from here on out, maybe that we're not thinking about?
Now, I want to agree with you in the sense of I think it's more set up for 2022 because they have a lot of money coming off the books this offseason.
True.
Dave Dombrowski isn't here to continue to be a 500 ball club. So I think they're more set up to really go for it next year. But the 2021 Phillies are still in the race. As of right now, I think when you look at the lineup, and it's two guys, really one guy that you wouldn't think coming into the year. Odubel Herrera and Gene Segura have been massive for this team.
The villains, yes.
Coming into the year, if you would have said those two guys were going to be in the top five on the roster in WAR, I would have said you were crazy, especially Odubel Herrera.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who's on pace for like nearly a seven WAR season if you played 162 games. It's been incredible. I don't know where they'd be without those guys, especially lately. The meat of the order really hasn't hit. Rhys Hoskins is in an abysmal slump right now. But the top of the order has been getting it done. So if the table setters are there, which they have been recently, it's kind of sparked this Phillies run. I think those guys are going to be key throughout the rest of the year. If they can continue to even play at 75% of what they've been the past 2 weeks, it bodes really well for the Phillies.
So would you say Odubel has solidified the center field position?
I think he's turned a negative into a positive. He's been one of the better center fielders in the National League. There's no debate in it. You just got to look at his numbers. Everything's above average.
He is a villain. You know,
he is.
And Gene Segura, too. These are two guys. One of them, the fan base won't forgive. They won't give him a second chance. They're not giving him the Mike Vick treatment. And the other one, you know, he gets hated on for his hustle even after a walk-off win. After he walks you off, they come at him the next day. It's unbelievable.
It's crazy. After they walked it off the other day, the one you're mentioning against the Braves, the second one, Gene Segura is off, hit off the wall.
Yeah.
Driving into work the next morning, I'm listening to 94.1, and you would think that those guys cost them the game.
I know.
It was unbelievable. We just had a huge win, and we're sitting there blaming the two guys who were the catalyst for the victory.
Yeah. They're villains in this town, regardless of how well they
fit.
There are two best players at the moment, and they are villains. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's crazy. And Gene Segura should probably be an all-star. I think he's sixth in the voting at the moment.
And he's sitting 335. The guy's tearing the cover off.
It's unbelievable, yeah. And you mentioned Odubel, the villain. Look, the off-the-field stuff, absolutely. It's not justifiable. But at the end of the day, he's on the roster. I'm not the general manager. If he's playing, I want him to perform well. And he has been performing well. It was a part of me the other day. The walk-off, the third straight walk-off when Segura walked it off. Part of me was really hoping Odubel would come through because I wanted to see how people reacted.
That's true. I mean, we want to win. You know how it is in Philly. We just want to win, and winning cures everything. So on a four-game winning streak like that, I think people need to peel back on the villain stuff a bit, basically.
If they're helping you win ball games, at the end of the day, we want this team to succeed. And I will say this, I've been to a lot of games so far this year. The villainous, the booing is way overblown. It really is non-existent, if that makes sense. The only really time I've heard the boos is after a strikeout or, he leaves guys on base. Other than that, stepping up to the plate, the boos really aren't there. It's more of a social media thing.
Right.
At least, the outrage,
Absolutely. You mentioned Rhys Hoskins. Kev, he's 0 forever at this point. The constant thinking, is that he'll work himself out of it. What do you do here? Do you sit him? Do you put Luke Williams at third and Bohm at first? I mean, how do you fix the Rhys Hoskins situation?
Personally, I'd like to see a little bit more of Brad Miller playing over at first base. They've done a nice job of getting his bat in the lineup, but he's not the greatest defender. You can kind of hide him at first base.
That's true.
The thing with Hoskins, you can circle back to Hector Neris and even Aaron Nola at times this year. For whatever reason, a portion of the fan base just does not want to criticize our players. Look, this team hasn't been over 500 in a decade. This is a losing culture. Why are we defending these players that haven't achieved anything?
Wow, that's true. That's a very good point.
At the end of the day, I'm trying to win. If these guys aren't performing,
boy, am I
with
you.
It is what it is.
Yeah, Kev, you just hit the nail on the head with the way Tech feels about the team.
Absolutely.
I will say this in Reese's defense, and this is remarkable given his current slump. He still leads the team in runs scored and RBIs. Most people don't realize that.
I've been someone who's been hard on him. He was big for them in the stretch where they didn't have Harper and Real Muto. He was really big for them. But this is the thing we go through with Rhys every single year, and this is why, to me, he's not a building block player. You can't have these type of stretches, and he has them every single year and multiple times a year. It's just not sustainable on a winning ball club.
Yeah, he's number one on my chopping block, personally.
You can't have him in the middle of the order going 0 for 100.
No.
It's just not something you can do. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just moving forward, it's just something to keep an eye on more. He is terrible with guys on base.
I know.
He's not somebody who is able to do a job.
No.
He strands so many guys on third with one out. It's not winning baseball.
Which brings me to Spencer Howard. It feels like this organization is laser focused on selling him to the fans as a starter, when in reality, at least from my eyesight and what I'm seeing, he'd be more suited for a bullpen role, like perhaps a setup man who can give you that one tremendous inning. Why don't they see this as a possibility? Is it Middleton not trying to spend money on a legit starter?
I'm not sure exactly what it is, if it's just the stubbornness of the front office that they don't want to, or this new organization that they don't want to admit that.
That's it. Yeah.
It's not the guy that they thought he was. And look, he has dominant stuff, but Bullpen Blues consistently, I've been preaching, I believe he's a relief pitcher. It's not normal for your velocity to significantly drop. And for those who want to say he needs to build up his arm strength, I saw this guy pitch in double and triple A. He was hitting 95, 96 later in the ballgame. There's something wrong.
Yeah, well, luckily on Monday night, I did hear them say that he did manage to hit 95 in the fifth inning, which was a positive development.
He had already given up the lead,
though. His
stuff
looked good. His curveball especially looked really good on Monday night.
Yeah.
But they can't have two guys in the rotation that are going to give you four or five innings. And
I know. Of course, I'm
mentioning Velasquez as well. It's a huge flaw with this roster right now.
Yeah, the pitching, the back end of the rotation, I feel like, it's like you mentioned, we've been a losing team for 10 years. I mean, it's been a problem for 10 years.
Yeah.
Really, since the four aces were out the door, we've been struggling to find some continuity at that point. So, say, Kev, hypothetically, you know, say we're within that five games of first place come July. Do you want us to be buyers or sellers? Because you did mention it's a 2022 thing, you think. What would you like to see them do if they're in that five-game range?
Well, I guess it would depend where we're at in that five-game range. If we're right there, if we're nipping at the heels, I would like to see a bigger move. But a bit I have circled is Kyle Gibson of the Texas Rangers. Starting pitcher, he's been dominant this year.
Yeah.
He's been a career guy who... a back of the rotation arm more than anything. He's having a really good year this year. I think he's a guy that you could get for cheaper, and he's under team control through 2022, which is big. He's 33 years old. They actually drafted him back in 2006.
Okay.
He didn't sign with the club, but this is a guy that I think that you could get cheaper instead of going for a guy like a Jose Berrios, who's probably going to cost you Nick Abel, which you don't really... that's not somebody that I'm looking to move from everything.
No,
that
not until I know what he is.
With the guy.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm looking more of like a tier B type of move like that. Danny Duffy's another guy in Kansas City who, back in 2019, when they did the Jason Vargas thing, I was saying, go get Danny Duffy. He's under team control for a couple of years. A guy like that is what I would like to see this team do, because it helps you without completely gutting your farm system.
Right. For our listeners who've been on the line with Kevin Dixon of Dan Patrick EDU in Section 215, Kev, we appreciate you taking the time to give us your Phillies insight. Quick prediction, Phillies will make the playoffs this year, yes or no?
I'm still saying yes.
I know
it sounds crazy, but yeah, maybe I'm just an optimist.
It's okay.
Yeah, maybe I'm just an optimist, but I still believe that... they have the talent. It's more of just filling out the roster.
Yeah, true. And execution for sure.
Yep.
Well, Kev, we really appreciate your time, and we'll catch up with you again before the end of the season.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having it on. I can't wait till next time.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You know that the numbers don't lie.
Men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Numbers don't lie.
Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie.
Keeping it real. 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 Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie. Playoff edition.
Another playoff edition. Tech, the Sixers dropped Game 4 to the Hawks in heartbreaking fashion.
Every time we say it out loud.
I know. Joel, we already talked about his worst second half of his career, probably.
Yeah.
They blew the chance to really step on the throat of the Hawks.
Yeah.
So much in the spirit of my previous few number segments, I decided to recap the Game 4s from the second rounds from the finals years.
Okay.
Again, returning to those finals years of 67, 77, 80, 82... 83, and of course, 2001.
Yes, sir.
So in 67, they beat Boston in round two in five games, with the lone loss coming in game four. 121 to 117 in Boston. So a road loss in game four by 4 points. Monday night was a road loss in game four by 3 points.
Yeah.
Much like this game four on the road, not a good result. Will Chamberlain, though, set a single game NBA playoff record for rebounds with 22. It's worth noting that also in a loss, Joel had 21 rebounds on Monday night. I thought that was an interesting parallel.
But when you're a 7-footer and guys are just jacking up 100-plus shots on the other squad, missing a ton,
There was a lot of misses. Yeah. I think Bogdanovich and Trae Young combined to shoot 17 to 50. So that's 33 boards coming down.
Right there.
I hear you. I just like to look for the silver lining.
Yeah, it's true.
In 77, they'd again play the Celtics and lose game four on the road again in Boston by a score of 124 to 119 before wrapping the series at home in seven games. That's a scenario that unfortunately could play out this year, too.
No, I hope not.
We'd rather not see seven games versus the Hawks. I know that. In that game, though, also a loss. Doug Collins dropped 36.
Ah.
Old coach Doug Collins.
Dougie C.
In 1980, they played the Hawks in round two, like this year, and won the series in five games like we really wish they were able to do this year.
Oh, man.
They won game four on the road in Atlanta that year, though, demolishing the Hawks 107-83, and that was actually the first playoff matchup between those franchises.
Wow.
Dr. J dropped 30-10 in that win. In 82, semis were a six-game series versus the Bucks, and we won 4-2. The squad would win game four on the road, 100-93, behind 21-11-9 from Dr. Dre. Missing the triple-double by one assist. Just like Ben last night or two nights ago, missed a triple-double by one assist.
Yeah.
In 83, they swept out the Knicks in the semis and route to the chip. Obviously, we know they went 12-1 that postseason.
Right.
They beat them at the Garden, 105-102, behind 29-14 from Moses Malone.
Oh, yeah.
So far in finals years, up to this point, recapping, they're 3-2 in game fours of the second round, which brings us to 2001. That semifinal round four game was the famous seven-game series against Vince Carter and the Raptors.
Yeah, tough.
The squad won game four on the road, though, 84-79. Wasn't much notable in the box score on that one.
No, low-scoring affair.
Yeah, low-scoring affair, a lot of defense. So all in all, in finals years, they're 4-2 in second-round game four. So this loss doesn't fit with the history. Now they're 4-3 if they make it to the finals this year.
Right.
Game five is the key, though, man. As we know, teams that win game five in a seven-game series tied at two games apiece win the series over 80% of the time.
Yeah.
It's just math because, Tech, numbers don't lie.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games.
Prem's MLB Picks. A good week, 2-0.
Well, Tech, I finally got my 2-0 baseball picks week to bring my mark to 5-3.
You're over 500 now.
I am over 500, which is a good place to be.
Yep.
The Rangers did, in fact, upset the MLB best Giants at the time by a score of 4-3, so I picked an upset.
Yep.
And the Yankees easily handled the Twins in Minnesota 9-6. That was a 9-4 game late.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm heating up.
Maybe.
So here are today's locks. Locks. I know you're going to love this one. Give me the Phils tonight behind Zach Wheeler to handle biz in L.A. versus Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers.
You're breaking the homer rule here.
A little bit. It won't be easy. This is one of those Phils win type of nights. They're rocking the spring training jerseys tonight at the request of Bryce Harper.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, they can do that?
They can do that.
No.
I think Wheeler continues to just deal at a Cy Young pace in this one. I like us in a tight, low-scoring game, something like 2-1, 3-2. Phil straight up in L.A., lock. Next, Tech, I'll take the A's at home in Oakland to handle the Angels. The Angels are sending Griffin Canning and his 5.22 ERA to the mound to face off against an A's team with the 9th best scoring offense in the major leagues and a 23-18 home record. Conversely, the Angels are 15-17 on the road. Really a coin flip type of team. They have won four of their last five. However, I like the A's at home tonight. Lock. So to recap, we got the Phils upsetting the Dodgers behind Zach Wheeler's electric stuff.
Lock.
And the A's to handle biz at home in the Coliseum versus the California rival Angels.
Lock.
This has been Prem's MLB Picks.
See you next week.
Vet Alumni.